Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks so much for joining me. Again, this week, we will talk about all things policing. We have an interesting guest to talk to in the interview room. But before we get into the interview room, I want to say a couple things. First of all, if you don't follow me on Facebook, you need to go to Facebook and look under Randy Sutton, Public Figure. On Twitter, I'm at LT Randy Sutton. And you'll see all the things that I post if you come to my Facebook page. Also, check out my books on Amazon.com. Let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The briefing room. Headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
Once again, the madness of the NFL insanity continues, and it's getting even worse now. Let me tell you what happened. It really raises my blood pressure to even bring this up, but they've gone even beyond their lack of respect for the country when they do their kneeling garbage. You know, on October 13th, a New Orleans police officer named Marcus McNeil was murdered in the line of duty. He was gunned down during an investigation. He had 3 years on the job. He had a wife. He had two young children. And as you know, New Orleans police officers are very poorly paid. Well, he gave his life for his community. Several days later, there was a football game, and the New Orleans Saints were playing. They actually had the unbelievable immorality to kneel when they offered a moment of silence for the death of police officer Marcus McNeil. Every one of those punks got on his knee as a show of disrespect for a police officer who was killed in the line of duty. What kind of monsters are these? What kind of immoral pieces of garbage are these that they could take their million-dollar salaries, disrespect the flag of the United States, the national anthem of the United States, and show so much callousness that they would publicly display hatred like that towards a man who gave his life for their city? You know, I've written and talked about the NFL for quite a bit of time. Their pretense of protesting allegedly the mistreatment of blacks by law enforcement officers, saying that there is institutionalized racism and the police officers are gunning down young black men because they feel like it. We all know that that isn't true. And they have been harping on this since that punk Colin Kaepernick began this madness. But it's getting worse. It's not getting better. And when you see a display like this, where it becomes even more directed towards a police officer who, by the way, was black, is African American. Didn't his black life matter? Well, apparently not to them it didn't. They couldn't care less. They sit back and they collect their huge inflated salaries. They show their disdain for the country that allows that to happen. And then they have the gall, I don't even know what the word is, and I'm not usually at a loss for words, but the immorality is really the only thing I can attribute this to. that they could care so less for the life of a person who did their best to save their community and to protect their community. I think it's beyond belief, and they got so much heat from it. The crowd lost their mind. They were booing them, and they got a lot of heat. So a couple days later, the coach of the Saints was forced to come out and deal with it. And he gave this absolutely ridiculous sounding press conference where he said, "Oh, it was just a misunderstanding. That's all it was. It was a misunderstanding." Well, I think we understand all too well. I think we understand exactly what these people stand for. And it certainly isn't justice. It certainly isn't morality. It certainly isn't anything of a positive nature. They only care about themselves. They care about some misguided myth about law enforcement. You know, when we see Americans see this kind of behavior, the reaction is growing. The reaction of anti-NFL, anti-players is growing every day. They are literally biting the hand that feeds them. I have no use for them whatsoever. I don't think that, I mean, to me, it's football is a waste of time anyway for me. But what these people have shown is they're dividing our country instead of trying to bring it together. Law enforcement officers every single day are putting their lives on the line, quite literally losing their lives, as in the case of Officer Marcus McNeil. But each day they are interacting with hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people in positive ways, not just negative ways. They are touching the lives of so many. There was an article just today about a law enforcement officer who came across a family that was homeless and helped to feed them and get them assistance. And these are the kind of things that go on every single day. And they couldn't care less about the color of those people. And yet, the narrative that's being pushed out by politicians, by social media, by mainstream media, is that the police are the enemy. If we as Americans do not address this, if we don't stand up for those who serve, this country is going to become more and more divided. We are going to see more and more officers lose their lives, but also the murder rates in our major cities, mostly with black populations, is rising dramatically. Well, why is that? Those officers who police those communities are at a point where they are afraid to get involved. This is the perfect storm for murders to increase and death toll to climb, because when you have police officers who, because they are afraid of becoming victims themselves, not victims of violence, this is something that I hear literally almost every day, that police officers are not afraid of going out and doing their job because they're afraid of the bad guys. Their heart and their soul, they want to go up against them because they are the enemy. But other forces are taking effect here, and that is the political environment. And now I say political environment, I'm not just talking about, you know, what we dealt with Obama for his 8 years, which was about as political as it gets. I'm talking about the politics of police departments. The officers that are facing disdain and persecution by their own administrations is what I'm talking about. If you talk to a street cop now, the chances are they're going to tell you they're more afraid of their administration than they are of the criminal element. Now, there's always been that part of police administrations that has caused morale issues, that have not been, you know, tremendous leaders. When you have 18,000 different police departments, as we do in this nation, you're gonna have really good leaders, and you're gonna have really bad leaders, and a lot of in between leaders. But in police leadership, if the street officers don't think that the administrations are going to support them, well, they are going to lose their morale, lose their desire to serve. They're going to have difficulties in retaining their officers. They're going to have difficulties in recruiting their officers. And this is what we're seeing right now across America. So as the body count rises in cities like Chicago, in Baltimore, which actually, believe it or not, Baltimore, under the excellent leadership of the Marilyn Mosby state's attorney and that idiot mayor they used to have, their murder rate is now higher than Chicago. Not the number of murders, but the murder rate itself. It's beyond belief what's going on. And who, you know, here's the thing. You don't hear this in the mainstream media. The death toll in these inner cities, the murders are being committed mostly against black males, young black men. But who's committing it? It isn't the cops. It's other black men. This is the reality. And yet no one is addressing it. No one is talking about how, if black lives really matter, you have to allow the police to do their jobs. And this is what's happening. The cops are standing down. Some places it's called depolicing. Some places they call it the Ferguson effect, because they're afraid of becoming the next social media criminal. You know, every time a police officer has to use force on someone, physical force of any kind, it never looks good. The optics are always bad, because it's violence. If someone chooses not to comply with a law enforcement officer in an arrest situation, and they fight them, it is ugly. Officers need to use the force necessary. And what we are seeing now is police officers are so afraid to use the proper amount of force that they're not using enough. And what that actually does is that increases the danger to them and the danger to the suspect, because if they don't take the individual into custody within a short period of time, it can lead to a furtherance of that violence. So if an officer is justified in using a certain amount of force, and they try to do it with the kid gloves because of the social aspect of this, and they're afraid of getting videotaped putting their hands on somebody, that leads to further danger for the cops, and also further danger for the citizens. This is something that needs to be addressed on a national level, both from the U.S. Department of Justice, which, by the way, under President Trump, has been significantly more supportive of the American law enforcement officer. And I don't mean a little bit. I mean a whole lot. But it has to go further. We have to understand that all law enforcement officers, all law enforcement agencies, need to come to grips with this and act in unity. And that's not what we're seeing happening. We're seeing, in fact, just the opposite. We're seeing organizations who should be leadership of law enforcement, such as the International Association of Chiefs of Police, doing just the opposite. They just approved one of the most ridiculous suggestions and are recommending this for policy, anything I've ever heard, and that is allowing police officers to fire warning shots. And they say that they're doing that in order to give police officers another use of force that's not deadly. Well, here's why this is so flawed. First of all, when you fire your weapon, you are responsible for where that bullet goes. If you fire in the air, it's going to come down. If you fire into the ground, it could hit a rock and ricochet, could hit you, could hit the suspect, could hit an innocent bystander. Where are you going to shoot where it's not going to, where that bullet's not going to impact somewhere? Oh, it's not. But what's the, here's the politics of this. If the police department now adopts this and says, oh, okay, you don't have to shoot them now, you can just fire a warning shot to scare them into giving up. Well, what happens after a police officer doesn't do that and shoots and kills the suspect justifiably? What that does is that gives almost instant litigation against the officer and against the police department, because if it's in policy that it's, that the use of force is, you could have fired a warning shot. Well, I can hear it now on the witness stand. Now, officer, did you fire a warning shot? No. Well, then why didn't you? And then that puts the onus onto the police officer and not onto the criminal. This is opening up a terrible can of worms. It's all part of this whole philosophical argument that needs to be addressed by law enforcement leadership, and not in the way they've been doing it in the last several years. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue. I want to tell you a little bit about my friends over at JSD Protective Services. If you have security needs anywhere in the country, those are the people to turn to. I can tell you this, that I've seen and dealt with a lot of security companies in my 34 years of policing. I've never seen a professionalism displayed by a security company as I have by JSD. Their motto pretty much tells it like it is. Their promise, available everywhere and at all times. They do everything. They really do. They do on-site security, armed security. They do courier stuff. They do private investigations. They do law enforcement. They do it all. And they do it well. And I can tell you this, that I met with some of their folks. They're very, very high quality. Their training is the best I've seen of any security company. It rivals that of law enforcement. So if you have any security needs, go to jsdprotectiveservices.com and check them out. Before we take a walk into the interview room, one thing I wanted to let you know is that I recently had the honor of being a keynote speaker down in Texas. And I got to tell you that one of the things that I really enjoy is getting to meet personally with the people that listen to this radio program. So if you would like to talk to me about addressing your group, whether it is a law enforcement or a civic group or even a volunteer group, let me know. Contact me at randysutton@americaoutloud.com. Thanks. Now let's take a walk into the interview room.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a corrections officer turned author. And his name is Tom Duncan, and he, along with a captain, Captain Joe DeFranco, who both retired from the Passaic County, New Jersey Sheriff's Department corrections field, have written a book. And the book is entitled Life as a Jailer Through the Officer's Eyes. Tom Duncan, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Hey, Randy, thanks a lot for having us, and I really appreciate you doing this show on corrections.
Well, you know, very often you guys are referred to as the forgotten law enforcement officers, and, you know, I think it's really good to get the perspective from corrections, because it really is there's not a lot known by the public about that field. So you've written a book about it, and I think it's information that the public needs to get. First of all, what made you decide to write a book?
Well, you know, first of all, that's exactly what was behind the motivation on a book. The book is the actual brainstorm of retired Captain Joe DeFranco. Joe called me up one day, and he wanted to meet for breakfast to talk about this endeavor that he wanted to pursue. And we met up, and he kind of pitched it to me by starting off saying, you know, Tom, every time I go to an event, a wedding, anything where I'm around a lot of people, and they find out that I'm a retired correctional captain, and I worked in one of the toughest jails in the state of New Jersey, they always want to hear, you know, a story about, you know, the jail. And one story is never really good enough, and it ends up lasting for the whole night. And when I leave, they say, you know, you should write a book. And it's happened so many times that, you know, I've almost convinced myself that that's really what I want to do, and I'd like you on board to co-author it with me. So I said, you know, Joe, that, you know, that's a really great idea, but we're going to have the one problem we're going to have is, you know, if we want to write, like, a nonfiction book, you know, that gives a factual account depicting both of our careers, you know, the public's going to have a hard time believing it. Even our counterparts out on the street, the street cops, they're not going to really, you know, believe it 100% either. So, you know, we couldn't let that stop us. And like you said, you know, correctional officers in this field are kind of forgotten. And, you know, Hollywood has given us a bad rap, and general public really has no clue on what we actually do. So 3 years later, this year, we finally have it published. And, you know, there were some polishing points we needed to do before we actually got it out there. We had met with Commissioner Bernie Kurek, New York State retired commissioner, police commissioner. But what a lot of people don't know is that Bernie was actually the commissioner of corrections also before he became police commissioner in New York City. And Bernie was, before he even became a New York City police officer, he was the warden at the Passaic County Jail in New Jersey. That was our tie to him, our hook. And we met up with him one night in his house and asked him to actually review the book and possibly give us a blurb for the back cover. And I'll tell you, I don't know if you've interviewed him or if you spoke to him or hear him speak, but this guy is just a wealth of information. I mean, he's just mesmerized when you speak with him. And he actually gave us a lot of tips on how to market the book. And, you know, even when he read it, how to polish it up. And it gave us a nice blur for the back cover, which was really good because even regular law enforcement officers like the cops on the street, they could, you know, they'll be able to appreciate that someone from his stature actually recommends the book even for you know, you guys to read.
Absolutely. Let's get back to the book. Now, it's entitled Life as a Jailer. Now, I know that there are some corrections officers that kind of bristle at being called jailers. you know, they sometimes view that as a misnomer, because there's so much to the corrections officer's job. Now, you worked in the Passaic County Sheriff's Department jail, is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, noted as one of the toughest jails in the state of New Jersey.
Let's talk about the difference between the county jail and the state's prisons. There's a difference, two of them.
Yeah, jail is where a criminal is going to first be housed, awaiting trial, and even sometimes after trial, if they're sentenced short enough to not even be sent to a state institution, they'll remain in that county jail. We had somewhere around 2,400 inmates housed at our jail, all the way from, you know, people doing just a few days for traffic fines up to murderers. You have people coming back from prison that are on retrials or appeals that will also be housed in jails. Prisons, on the other hand, are where inmates or the prisoners are going to do the majority of their sentence. You know, they're sentenced to, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 25 years life. They're going to be in a prison institution. So that's the major difference. And the actual title jailer, you know, that's not something that Joe and I actually, you know, like to actually be called ourselves. I was going to get into that a little later on, you know, a lot of titles that were called. But we went back to the old term when it first originated, you know, like correction officers were actually jailers. So even the picture of the front cover of the book depicts an old time fashion key going into a cell door.
Right. No, I understand that. So let me ask you this. In your career, is this book told from your perspective or from the perspective of both of you?
Well, it's told from the perspective of both of us. But what was really like cool about working with Joe was, you know, Joey would come up with an idea and send me stuff, and, you know, I'd write stuff and send it back to him, and, you know, never once did we, like, you know, disagree on everything. We meshed really well together, and there are some chapters in a book where, you know, Joe identifies himself as speaking on certain issues, and then I speak on other issues in other chapters, but it's more or less of putting us in a blender in both our careers and blending it up. Now, there is one chapter in the book, chapter 9, titled Back in the Day, which Joey actually tells five of his most memorable stories through his 25 years in corrections, and I tell five of my most memorable stories in corrections. And then we have, you know, the book starts off with the first chapter, It's Time to Get Real, from the first day that we walked into that facility, on how we felt and the training that we went through. And then you have the second chapter, Fighting a Two-War Front. And, you know, that's where, you know, we're up against the inmates, and then you're up against, like, you know, the administration sometimes too, and trying to get.
Let's talk about that, because what we've been seeing in law enforcement is a lot of clashing between street cops and the guys actually out there doing the job, and the political motivated administrations. Is the same thing happening in the jails?
You know, it's kind of funny that you're asking me this question, because everybody who reads the book, one of their most favorite chapters is chapter 10. And this is, again, Joey's brainstorm right here. He called me up one day. He says, Ty, he says, I got an idea for a chapter that's going to blow you away. And the title of the chapter is With Friends Like These, Who Needs Enemies? And the chapter starts off with, you know, this chapter is about all the support we get sometimes from, you know, the administration and the guys ahead of us, and we're gonna tell you how that all flows and how that works together. And the chapter's empty. is empty pages. And then the last page says, you know, we're sorry this chapter was so long, laughing out loud, but that's basically, you know, sometimes the help and, you know, that we get from politicians in, you know, in our field that really actually truly care about us. And then we put a little note in there saying that not all departments, you know, are like that. You know, you got a lot of, good administrators out there that, do have the backs of their men, and some true politicians that really do. But for the most part, you know, they really don't care unless it's time for the vote. You know, then they're, you know, oh, hey, how you guys doing? Law enforcement, yeah, we love you guys. But everybody seems to love Chapter 10 because it's like, you know, they think they're going to get into that. All the support we get sometimes from politicians and our administrators, and there's just like blank pages there. So they're like, you guys did a great job with that.
So sometimes it's the words not said that mean the most, right?
Exactly. Absolutely. And that's where, like, you know, we talked a little bit about that in chapter two, fighting the two war front.
Let's talk about that. So, you know, when you're in the jail, I mean, basically, you are locked in with, you know, with thousands of inmates, and you know, and it's just a very small amount of corrections officers.
Well, if you want to know, it's many, many different ways. A lot of times they'll control themselves, because what happens is, if one knucklehead in a dorm filled with 100 guys or 200 guys starts, you know, causing some shit, these other inmates know that, you know, we're going to come in a forceful way, and we're going to take care of what needs to be taken care of. And if we need to toss that whole dorm and go through everything to try and, you know, find some stuff that doesn't belong in a jail, contraband, that's going to ruin their whole day. So they'll take care of that most of the times by themselves. But you do have your flare-ups, and we did have a canine units in the jail, and I was part of that to help in large movements. And when they hear that dog in the jail, that was one of the coolest things working in the jail, because you hear that dog barking in that jail and the echo in that jail, and it sounds really cool. So, but you know what? A strong show of force lets them know that, you know, we're in control. But, you know, it's not a steady thing that needs to always be displayed. I mean, they know that they have to depend on us for their needs, and they know that, you know, they have to play by the rules. Otherwise, you know, when shit goes down, you know what? There is no losing for our side. We will win. So,
right. Have you ever been present during an uprising in the jail?
As far as like trying them like to take over or to riot, no. But you know, like you know, fights and, you know, different types of violent acts, yes.
Well, you know, there have been a number of corrections officers who lost their lives in the line of duty this last year. You know, where there was a woman who was thrown down an elevator shaft. Several have been beaten to death, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a dangerous place to be. What's your feelings on, you know, female corrections officers when it comes down to working with the male inmates? Does that work out okay?
Yeah, it does. You know what? And then, you know, I guess you're kind of clairvoyant. But that is actually chapter three, violence, a way of life. Yeah, you know what? The female officers I've ever worked with were super. And they tend to have, Randy, they tend to have a calming effect on males. I'm sure out on the street, you know, you can see that sometimes. I mean, you know, you're going to run into a knucklehead that they don't give a shit who you are, what you come from, what's going on. They're just going to be an ass no matter what. But I would say 95% of the time, the females have a calming effect on the males, and I loved working with them. They were great officers, and I would, you know, if I was in charge of a facility, I would definitely have them in the facility. Now, they kind of tried in our facility and other facilities, they try and keep them with the women. They don't try and keep them with the men most of the time. But when they do come in, they do very well.
Interesting. Let me ask you a question about that. When it comes down to the separation in the jail, the male inmates and the female inmates, have you noticed a trend that there are more and more female inmates being incarcerated on violent crimes than there were years ago?
Oh, absolutely. And I'll tell you one thing. The females are so much harder to work with. Even like with the males, when I'm up on a maximum security floor with the males, they're so much easier to work with than the lower floors, these guys that are coming in for like little petty shit. Because those guys are like, you know, they think they're the wise guys and they have something to prove. Those, you know, these guys coming in with these heavy charges, they already almost know the system, and it's a lot easier to work with them. But like with your question with the females, they are just so hard. I want to tell you something. Their hygiene is a lot worse than the males' hygiene. They're nastier than the males. There are more fights. They're just all around harder to work with. And so that's why I say, you know, these female correctional officers that work in institutions, my hats really go off to them because they have it harder, a lot harder than the male officers do.
That's really interesting. That's a perspective that I would not have even considered, but that's very interesting. Well, there have also been, you know, there have been a number of corrections officers who have wound up being corrupted by female inmates where they develop relationships with them. Have you ever had any of your corrections officers get involved in that type of situation?
Absolutely. Now you just jumped ahead to chapter 11, sex behind the bars. What we have here is in chapter 11 is when most people think of prisons and jails, they're thinking of the rape aspect. You know, you go to jail, you're going to be raped. You know, don't drop the soap. But there are times when, yes, officers, both male and female, are placed in situations where they're manipulated by the inmates, and they do end up having sexual contact with them. And your answer to that is yes. I've worked with officers who have been fired for that, and it's heartbreaking because even you can tell as our counterpart in law enforcement, when you get a bad apple, or I don't want to say bad apple, but apple that goes rotten, that goes bad, because I'd like to believe everybody starts off, you know, in the academy wanting to be the best officer and a true officer that they can. But we know that's not always the truth, and that people do end up, you know, taking a road down the wrong path for one thing or another, whether they get, you know, manipulated or sucked into it or just make a bad decision, whatever, it happens. And they end up giving us all a bad name. But yes, there have been times where, you know, in my career, throughout my career, that officers have been, let go. A lot of times the department doesn't want to prosecute because they don't want that coming down on them, you know, looking bad in the eye of the public. You actually have that happening inside your facility. So it's kind of swept underneath the rug sometimes, and they're just, you know, they're dismissed and told to sign their release and we won't press any charges on you, and they just go about their merry way.
You know, there's been that very popular television series Orange is the New Black about women incarcerated. How close to reality is that?
You know, to tell you the truth, I've never even saw one episode of that show.
Okay.
A lot of people like to, but you know what? A lot of people, you know, that's not an uncommon question. No, a lot of people will come at you with like either a movie or a TV series and say, now compare that to, you know, what's it really like? Is it close? You know, and from movies and TV series that I have seen, you know, there are some things in it that, you know, that are true, but, you know, most of the part is it just kind of frustrates me, and I don't want to watch it. That's, you know, one of the reasons that we even wrote the book is because, you know, the public has just this concept of, you know, that's made up from Hollywood, or, you know, TV series on jails and prisons. So, you know, we wanted to actually, you know, set the record straight, telling the world exactly what it's like behind the walls, and that, you know, corrections officers are true law enforcement officers with one of the most dangerous, like I said, with one of the most dangerous jobs in law enforcement, and why we should be recognized and respected for that.
Oh, without a doubt. Is there, as you mentioned something about prison rape, and that's, you know, anyone thinks about going to prison, and you know, that's the first concept that comes out. Oh, you know, about, you know, I'm going to get raped in prison. Is that a legitimate worry?
Yes, it is. And but it's not in a sense of where, you know, everybody thinks, you know, it's going to happen, you know, 100% to everyone, but it's out there. As a matter of fact, Joey tells a story about an actual rape in our facility that happened. It happens. Sometimes it'll happen for reasons that people wouldn't even think. You know, rapes don't always happen for, you know, because there's a sexual desire for an individual. It could happen because, you know, they want to teach you a lesson, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, with, you know, a male part, you know, entering somebody. You know, they'll use broomsticks and whatever they have, you know, and that's happened also in, you know, in riots, you know, when Joey and I did our research and just being in the field knowing that sometimes, and, you know, happens with females. And they'll even do that, you know, like I said, with riots with correctional officers, you know, just punishing them back, and just, you know, those are the guys you really feel sorry for to get caught up in something like that, because a lot of these inmates are, you know, they see this as payback time, and a lot of these guys get tortured before they even get killed, and all the details don't come out about that because, like I said, the facility doesn't want to release all of that nasty stuff, so it'll just be, you know, there was a you know, a riot or an uprising in a jail, and two of the officers were killed. But, you know, it's not like they just, like, simply killed them. I mean, they torture these officers at first, you know. So it's, you know, it's kind of something that's, you know, not very, you know, one of the things that's always in the back of your mind that, you know, just like you guys out on the street, you know, my son's a cop down in Washington, D.C. My other son's going now for Capitol Police. And I've always, you know, knew the dangers that you guys, my brother was a retired sergeant off the street. I've always known the dangers that you guys faced, and appreciate your bravery out there on what you face. And, but like you said at the beginning of the show, a lot of people don't know what we face in, you know, inside the jail. And, you know, they don't even look at us sometimes as being, you know, correctional officers. We're called, you know, guards. You know, that would be like, you know, what if, like, my son, who's a cop down in Washington, D.C., Metro Police, what if I called him a security officer? You know, that would be like an insult. But, like, I'm a security officer. Well, you know, you're secure in the streets, so, you know. No, you're not.
I understand what you're saying, and I got to agree with you that there, and that's why it's important to get this information out, that that corrections officers are professional law enforcement officers, and that they have a very difficult job to do, and very often the pay is much less than that of a street cop too.
You want to know something, Randy? I run this group page on Facebook, corrections officers worldwide, and I have guys all over the world and all over the country in there, and you know that was. One of the posts every time that comes up, you know, somebody says, what are your starting salaries? And, you know, where do you guys work? And to see some of these starting salaries and to know the dangers that these officers, have, it floors me. In the state of New Jersey, we were paid well. New York is going to pay well. But when you get these correctional officers that are working out in the Midwest, or down south somewhere, and they're telling you that they're making like a little under $10 an hour, it's like, you're what? Are you kidding me? And it's heartbreaking that these officers aren't seen and paid for the jobs that they do, like an analogy, like these guys in the military that go off to war, what do they make? And then you got these NFL players or sports players that are making millions of dollars. How do we get back to, paying people for what they really, really, really deserve? And sometimes
you're absolutely right. In fact,
Go ahead. Sometimes we don't always, get paid. You're not getting paid for like all the time on what you're actually doing during the day. You're getting paid for what can happen during the day. You're a lieutenant, right? You're out there and out there keeping the people in Nevada, Las Vegas safe. Sometimes that throughout your long career, there might have been days that you really, didn't do anything. You patrolled everything, you had wrong. I had a real good day today. Nothing went wrong. What does that mean? That we just take your pay that day and we only give you like $8 an hour because nothing happened? You know what I'm saying? Somebody got shot, you got a guy with a gun. You have to respond to that. You have to get out of your patrol car and you have to face this individual down. That's what you're getting paid for. You're getting paid for the what if. And behind the bars, that's what all of these officers that you're making reference to that are getting, not the salaries that they deserve, that's why they should be getting paid a lot more money, because of that what if. You know what? That uprising happens, that takeover happens where they riot. You know what? And you take that politician, or you take that warden, or even in the private companies that don't want to pay these individuals, put them in that situation, and then they'll see how fast, you guys, need to be paid a little bit more, And sometimes you have the ignorance, not only just in the public not knowing what we do, and some of the counterparts, the street cops, because a lot of street cops know exactly what we do. But sometimes even in the higher administrations, these people are being hired. They have no background in corrections. They're just, political hacks, friend or whatever, and they come in and they put them in charge of a facility that, they have absolutely no idea about. That's why, getting back to Commissioner Carrick, when he took over as commissioner in New York City, Rikers Island, close to 20,000 inmates in there, and he put that place in check. Why? Because he had a background in corrections. And when Giuliani said, I need somebody to straighten this place out, he jumped into that position and he straightened that jail out. And he's seen what kind of job he did there, and he came in and his next promotion was police commissioner. But there's a lot of that, what you say.
Let me ask you this, Joe. What's the training involved when you become a corrections officer? Is it similar to a police academy?
Yes. Now you're back at chapter five, tools of the trade, and training. The only thing that, we're really not going to go over is the Title IIc, like codes of, roads, vehicle stops. But, everything else, it basically the same. You get a lot of book work, a lot of hands-on stuff, self-defense stuff.
How long is the academy?
Law stuff. Well, speaking with, now that I'm in this group, and it's actually almost been an enlightening to me that I started this group, Correctional Officers Worldwide, and getting feedback from people all over the country. It actually varies, Randy, from like how long people are staying into the academies. But on average, I would say almost like from 10 to 16 weeks. Now, our training was 12 weeks. I actually went through two corrections academies and one police canine academy. So, yeah, anywhere I would say on an average nationwide from 10 to 16 weeks.
Gotcha. Well, you know, we're running out of time. And do you have a website for the book?
Yeah, not a website, but on Facebook, if you just search in that little box, Life is a Jailer, that's our page for the book. And Amazon, also, we have a lot of reviews, because that was one of the things that we were worried about, marketing the book, on how we would market it to the public. And, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, Commissioner Carrick turned us on to, too, you know, market it towards... at first, corrections officers, have them write their reviews like on Amazon. This way you can direct people to that, and they'll back up, you know, your book, just like I backed it up with my blurb the back cover. Yep.
So where can my listeners find your book?
All right, the book is available anywhere books are sold. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any local bookstores. They might not have them right on the shelves, but they can order them for you. You just ask them to order Life is a Jailer, and they'll be able to get that for you. Or you can go right to our publisher's page. It's lulu.com. That's LULU.com.
But it is available on Amazon. That's probably the easiest way to get it.
Exactly, yes. It is available on Amazon, and I think it have Amazon Prime right now.
Okay.
So, and then you find it on Amazon, you can also read the reviews. Could I just read one excerpt from the book at the back of the book?
Absolutely, yeah, let's do that.
After chapter 12, we have a final note. A final note in the book. It's titled "Final Note." It says, "The main reason we wrote this book was to correct Hollywood's version of what they call jail guards or prison guards, and to show and tell everybody who reads the book that we corrections officers are true law enforcement professionals who put our lives on the line each day. We should just like to leave you with one last thought." There are places in this country where society's worst nightmares live, and where the best of men, correctional officers, and the worst of men, inmates, prisoners, face off and try and get through each day alive. These places are called prisons and jails, and those nightmares are real. And the men and women who keep them there are called corrections officers, not guards, not glorified babysitters, not wannabe cops, not screws, not hacks, not turnkeys. So we're tired of being looked upon as the redheaded stepchild of law enforcement. So please pay us the respect we deserve and have earned as are in our profession. We're called corrections officers, and we're one of the toughest and baddest law enforcement officers God has ever made. We just wanted to dedicate the book to all the retired and active correction officers that are still out there putting their lives on the line to keep society's most dangerous individuals secure. God bless. Love you all. Joe DeFranco, Tom Duncan. And I appreciate being on the show, Randy. And I thank you for having us on to bring to highlight corrections so well needed. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay homage and give thanks to those men and women who have given their lives in the line of duty. This week I have two names to read. The first is Police Officer Marcus McNeil, the New Orleans Police Department in Louisiana. Police Officer Marcus McNeil was shot and killed while investigating a suspicious person near the intersection of Tara Lane and Lake Forest Boulevard shortly after midnight. He and three other officers had just gotten out of their vehicles to investigate. Officer McNeil located the man nearby and attempted to speak to him. A struggle ensued during which Officer McNeil attempted to deploy his taser without the desired effect. The man then opened fire on Officer McNeil, killing him. Responding officers shot and wounded the man, who fled to a nearby apartment complex. He was taken into custody after remaining barricaded for several hours. He was charged with first-degree murder and several firearms and felony narcotics offenses. Officer McNeil served with the New Orleans Police Department for 3 years. He is survived by his wife and two young children. The second officer who lost his life in the line of duty is Officer Craig Lehner of the Buffalo Police Department. And unfortunately, Officer Lehner was a diver for the dive team and was on a training mission, and they lost him. They couldn't find him, and it took 5 days. And this morning, they discovered his body. And Officer Craig Lehner of the Buffalo Police Department died in the line of duty while on a training mission. These two men served their communities and gave their lives for those communities. May they rest in peace.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. Now, I'm your host, Randy Sutton. You can find me at Facebook. If you look under Facebook and you see Randy Sutton Public Figure, just like that or follow it, and you can see everything that I write and post. You can communicate with me there as well. I answer all of my messages personally. You can also find me at Twitter at LT Randy Sutton. LT Randy Sutton at Twitter. And you can find my books at Amazon.com. I have 4 books, and I think you'll like them. A Cop's Life, True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, True Blue to Protect and Serve, and The Power of Legacy. Thanks again.